on this month's pre-E3 Over the Fence podcast. Duke Nukem is old. Gold. Sorry, gold. Consoles hurt PC gaming. We say farewell to DirectX. PSN is back up, but Sony's not out of trouble yet. An Ubisoft CEO checks out Nintendo's new console and reveals some interesting details. We talk about superhero movies, Microsoft buying Skype, China's new approach to gold farming, and much, much more next on Over the Fence. Welcome to the pre-E3 edition of Over the Fence, a podcast for adventuring gamers to discuss the worlds of gaming, entertainment, and technology. I am Patrick, and with me are Chad.
Howdy.
David.
Hello.
Jeff.
Good day, y'all.
And last but not least, Jonathan.
Hello.
But he is least.
Okay.
Duke Nukem has gone gold.
What the heck?
It's totally happening now, right? It's totally.
No, I mean, it is. Like, they've already, like, started taking, like, pre-orders on Steam and everything. Like, the game is apparently, you know, I mean, it's gold.
So. Okay, before we go much further, who is going to get it?
Me! I was going to, but I don't have any money right now, so.
I have money, and I'm going to get it, and it's going to be awesome. I'm going to blow shit up and chew bubblegum.
You know, David, I just love your older persona. You've come so far from that little kid.
And yet I have not.
I don't think anybody that is involved with this group really grew out of their childhood.
And thank God for that.
Which is why we are who we are.
Maturity? What's that?
So anyway, important note, it's $5 off the pre-order on Steam if you play it on the proper gaming platform, the PC.
Oh, is the PC the only proper gaming platform for that title?
For Duke Nukem, for FPS, yeah, I would say so.
Because computers are best for shooters.
Yeah, I haven't played a Duke Nukem game since the old 2D one.
Of course, you date yourself by saying something like that.
I haven't ever played a Duke Nukem game before. I've heard of the Duke Nukem games, but I haven't ever actually.
You date yourself by saying any Duke Nukem game before this one.
I was only aware of Duke Nukem. I never played it.
Yeah.
I did watch my dad playing it, though.
Okay.
That was going to open us up to some, but I just left it alone.
Oh, dear.
All right, so we have, moving on.
No.
We have consoles hurting PC gaming. I don't know if this is really true. I have some counterpoints to some of this, so I just thought I would just kind of go through a couple of points here. I think some of you will agree or disagree. So, what we run into one of the first points is that we've heard of delayed or glitchy ports. A perfect example is a video I just watched today. I didn't know about this because I never bought it on PC. Was the Assassin's Creed game, the first one, not 2 or Brotherhood, just the first one. It takes like 3 minutes from the point you decide to like exit the game to actually get to the point that you can exit the game. And the menus make no sense in the process of doing so. I think that's a particularly egregious level. Like recent PC ports that I've played and enjoyed, the Batman, Arkham Asylum, Borderlands, Mass Effect 2, they've all been pretty smooth. So I don't think that's been a real issue.
I can think of a couple of really bad PC ports. Red Faction Guerrilla, for example. The PC port of that is just awful and full of glitches.
I heard that you can destroy like everything in that game, though.
That game is fun. Too bad they actually tie a story to it that isn't really very good. But the whole point of the game is to blow stuff up, and that's what makes it a great game.
I love blowing stuff up.
So they also say that we have dumbed down sequels, and I think, Jeff, you agree with that on the Dragon Age Origins 2 scenario.
I was very disappointed.
But also, I think Mass Effect 2 was streamlined and, in my opinion, improved.
But I think Mass Effect 2 has a much larger scale than Mass Effect 1 did. I mean, I think you visited more places, you met more characters, whereas Dragon Age 2 is kind of the opposite. It's a far more linear game, and it reuses a lot of the same assets, so you're visiting the same areas over and over again. In fact, they're really lame. Like, some of the layouts of the dungeons are exactly the same as other dungeons. They just move where doorways are.
That's rather depressing.
More than the first game. Yeah. Really. Like, I remember I walked into, like, a base somewhere. I walked inside and I said, wait a minute, I've literally been in this exact same base before. And it turns out that it was just the same asset.
It's not even that they moved the doorways. They literally, like, brick the doorways up. The doorways are still there, but you can no longer access them for some reason.
Like, you can even see where the doorways were before, but...
Yeah, it's really slapped together. It really seems like an old... You know,
that's what happened to worry about
Mass
Effect 3.
SWG.
Oh no, not you and SWG again.
I'm just saying, you know.
No, go ahead. I'm just teasing you.
Well, as far as reusing assets go, that game is notorious for it.
To some extent, every game is going to have some kind of asset reusage. It just depends on how blatant they are about, you know, hiding it. So moving forward, there's also the concept, like, you know, the future isn't now. This is something that I don't know. I kind of have an opposite appraisal of the situation. I kind of hated the whole keeping up with the Joneses concept of, like, PC hardware. Like, you could have two points in the history of PC gaming, I had the bleeding edge hardware that you could have for the processor and the CPU. That was before the processors decided we're going to become $1,000 items, and the GPUs were going to require three of them to the tune of $1,200. But even when I had the bleeding edge hardware, I still could not play the current games at what I would consider smooth frame rates. I always had some kind of frame lag or something. So in the case of, like, technology, you know, where we're kind of victims of the ports from the consoles, I'm kind of happy because A, most of them play just fine for me, and B, most of them run perfectly for me, and I don't have to, you know, my computer is a year and a half old and I don't have to rebuild after a year and a half, whereas before a year and a half, I'm like, okay, I need something new, something is not able to keep up with these games anymore. So that's my appraisal of that one. I mean, I feel like the companies are finding new and interesting ways to flesh out the consoles as best they can, and then give us the better assets, like the better textures and what have you.
And I think that's just going to be a natural progression of using consoles as a hardware base, because then it's going to be a little bit more static than using constantly upgrading computer hardware that's always coming out on the market.
Yeah. So the next step is also they're saying we have problems with lousy interfaces. And I will admit a few of them are kind of clunky. Like I hate that when Mass Effect 2, whenever you're buying upgrades, do one, you're out of the menu. Do it again, go back to the menu, do a second one, back out of the menu. I don't know, but the Borderlands interface and the menu system was a little clunky.
I was going to say.
Like, I don't understand why the quests, like the done quest menu is, I don't understand the order that it's in. It doesn't seem to be chronological based on when you did the quest.
Yeah, it seems to be like a preset order in the database of quest logs somewhere in the game.
And sometimes I have a need to hear, you know, Noxus recordings again, or, you know, Scooter saying, you know, smoking Jesus, titty cinnamon. You know, sometimes I just need to hear that again.
Well, and sometimes I've had several occasions, and of course I'm playing the console version for the most part, but there would be parts where something would happen and a message would pop up in the screen, but it'll be during when one of the, like, they're trying to talk to me through the message system in the game, and it'll cut out whatever they're saying, and there you just see their little picture in the corner, and you can see that they're talking and saying something, but you can't hear it because it's already cut out.
PC version had that too.
I have experienced that too.
Yeah, that's more of a QA thing, unless of a platform specific. But I agree. The other thing, the next step about the no mods, what we're pretty much doing is actually kind of refuting most of what this is saying, this article. So in some cases, like, you have a lot of free mods, like, as an example, Half-Life 2 had a lot of mods. Half-Life 1 had a crap load as well, but it seems like that's slowing down with today's games. But on the flip side, we're getting DLC, but then some DLC is terrible. But I think all the DLC on Borderlands was pretty solid, except for the Moxie one. And the Moxie one is solid if that's the kind of gameplay you want. You know, like, if you enjoy those arenas in the single player, then Moxie is a whole crap load of that.
Yeah. Enough where you takes like an hour to finish one of those rounds.
Yeah, which is crazy.
The thing is, those are exciting for like a while, but they just get like after it, like you get into like an hour and you're just like, oh, I don't want to shoot things anymore.
Well, the problem is you can't level up in there. And then like if you haven't, if they want you to use a certain weapon that you don't actually have a specialty in, then it's kind of pointless. You know,
also, my friends are always SMGs, better than me, so they spend the entire time bad-mouthing me the whole time, and it's just, it gets grating.
There is that as well. So the thing I think is funny is what they call the Great Divide. This is a point that has multi-tiers, but I think the one place that is really funny is the QuickTime events. QuickTime events make sense on consoles with finite controls on the controller. It makes less sense on like the keyboard because there's 10 kajillion keys. So so if they decide okay, hit P to continue, I'm like, oh, my hand was anywhere near P and I missed it and I'm dead, you know. But I think, I can't prove this, but I believe QuickTime events have kind of slowed down in their usage in the gaming industry.
I think people are getting sick of it. It's been pretty much relegated to games like God of War at this point.
Okay, that's good. They had QuickTime events in The Force Unleashed 2, but that game is just, it's pretty, but generally something I would give a bad review for.
Sequel by committee is what I would call that game.
Yeah. It's just like Zero Punctuation said, they padded the game to make it longer, and it's shorter than almost anything out there. I didn't know you could achieve that, but they did.
Okay, then.
So, two final points. The games for Windows Live sucks. Like, it created to, A, bridge the Xbox gap to the PC, and to compete with Steam. And there's no way, like nothing they've done to it has brought them with even spitting distance of competing with Steam.
Yeah, well, they've also done all kinds of things that have pissed a lot of people off, like the Fallout 3, for example. There was a console code that you have the PC, the Games for Windows Live version of the game. You can actually unlock all the achievements in the game, and they translate to your Xbox Live account.
Yeah, I heard about that. And I think that when there was an uproar, the developers like, well, that's, those
like,
are the PC
gamers.
Yeah,
you can do a lot of stuff with the console. Well, yeah, but that's not why we're upset about
it. Yeah, that's, I don't know. To me, I understand the objection, but like, it's achievements. And like, if achievements to me are just like a fun different angle on the gameplay.
It's a neat idea, but yeah, it's nothing like really.
Like if somebody has more achievements than me, I don't give a shit. I really don't. I have no, mm-hmm. Like people talk about their gamer scores. Like it is a sad world if you really have some sense of pride over your damn gamer score. So
I like doing achievements, for fun, which is kind of the point. So,
and I love the achievements where you do something you don't think the game is going to anticipate. And then it does. I'm like, ha ha ha, we knew you'd do that. Cause we know you gamers are crazy. Yeah,
Portal 2 is full of that.
Yeah. Which I love though. Portal 2, just, for anybody who doesn't know, there's a couple points in Portal 2 where, you're given an option, and the option is obvious. You're supposed to, run away or something, but if you fall for the trap, you get an achievement. And this actually happens a couple times. Always funny when it happens, so sometimes you'll do it just to see what happens, then I'll realize that there's an achievement, but,
I'm going to stay away from any spoilers for anybody who hasn't played Portal 2. But the ending of that game, that last thing, that was originally supposed to be just an Easter egg in the game. But it was so cool that they decided to make it an integral part of the game.
It was amazing. Oh. Yeah,
I'm so glad that you did.
So the final point is hating our favorite developers. Id Software, the people behind, Doom series and what have you. I have gone multi-platform with the new game Rage they're working on, which it was interesting when I heard about Rage coming out originally. I never even knew it was going to be for consoles. And then there was a developers conference where they talked about, we put controllers on everyone's desk, and now that they have to keep that in mind when they design the game. I didn't know that the writing was on the wall back in 2003 at E3 when Epic was demoing the Unreal Engine 3, showing us scenes from Gears of War, which ended up being an Xbox 360 exclusive. So the writing was on the wall a long time ago.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I don't hate them for this. The thing that might swing me towards the hatred is that Epic says something to the effect of, they're working on designing a new engine with next generation platforms in mind, and they're focusing on the platforms, not the PC, with this engine, which might drive the final nail home and, you know, crappy PC port. I hope not. I hope that they, you know, stay good to their roots, because all the development happens on a PC. I mean, look at Naughty Dog, the people who do Uncharted 2. If you watch them, they're all working on PCs. You can see the Windows layout, the UI. It's all Windows. So anyway, so I don't hate the favorite developers for going multi-platform. And again, I'm kind of happy for the multi-platform because I get more performance bang for my buck out of my hardware. People like Patrick, you know, using a laptop for gaming, you know, are on the short end of the stick for that one, though.
Harsh.
Yeah. So that's all I have for that one. The next point is talking about Farewell to DirectX. This is one of those things that I think is an interesting discussion, but not something worth noting for, you know, actual changes in the industry. I could be wrong. You know, I don't make a career of calling the ball in the air for technology, but
I'll leave that to Michael Pachter.
There's this concept of the developers who write for consoles at first have to write their games using an API or an application programming interface. The reason they do that is so that they're guaranteed stability out of the gate. So like a lot of the early games are not as optimized for the hardware as they could be. Later on, to cut some fat and a lot of the games to run faster, they do what's called writing to the metal. But that works in consoles because they have finite hardware. But there's PC developers talking about, you know, maybe all the kind of performance gains and all the kind of things they could showcase on PC hardware if they didn't have to deal with the DirectX API. I don't see that ever happening. Like, DirectX is kind of what brought all of the games to full functionality in Windows. I don't know if any of you have any experience with the older games before DirectX, but I remember the crappy little non-DirectX titles like Phantasmagoria using those terribly compressed graphics, and they barely ran, and I had a gaming machine at the time. So, you know, I don't know that that's the magic bullet.
Seventh Guest, that's what comes to mind for me. Well, I think there's a point to be made about DirectX. One thing, DirectX has been with us for so long that it seems to be like, you know, people talk in PC terms about DirectX, but the layman, you know, the normal people don't really even have any clue what that is. You tell someone, oh, this is a DirectX 10 game or whatever, and they're like, huh? Like, it means it looks pretty.
Pretty much.
Mm. Yeah, but I mean, I think there's always going to be another technology that comes down the pipe somewhere.
I still think it's funny that when you run Steam and every time you install like a new game, it always reinstalls DirectX.
Yeah.
I always thought that was really funny.
Yeah, I have DirectX already. I've played 50 games in my library.
Do you not see the install file on the desktop? Yeah.
But I mean, some of the stuff happens so far in the past that it's weird when you think about it. Did you know that the HD video standards were, you know, finalized back in like the 70s?
What?
Yeah, the 720p, 1080p, all the standards for HD video were finalized in the 70s because the technology was being worked on back then. It just, you know, it wasn't any place near where it was profitable to put into the marketplace.
So it wasn't commercialable.
Yeah, it was all kind of experimental. And already in Japan, they're coming out with the next generation HD televisions that are, you know, way higher resolutions. They're pretty much like computer monitors right now.
God damn it, Japan.
Yeah.
Hey, they've always been ahead of us technologically. Don't be so surprised.
Japan and your robots.
Yeah, exactly.
And we still don't get an AT-AT.
I want my AT-AT.
I wish.
Would be nice.
Yeah, but George Lucas said no.
Well, who cares? Screw what he says.
Speaking
That's
of George
true,
Lucas.
By the way. There was a group of people that wanted to build like a life-size AT-AT, and George Lucas
was
talking
about. But yeah. George Lucas said no. Well,
I'm making that clear for our listeners who may not know that was an actual thing.
Well, people have made life-size replicas of X-Wings and stuff like that, but I don't know. I think the trick is just, you know, don't let the lawyers of Lucasfilm, because I don't think it's, you know, George Lucas himself is sitting there with his turtleneck.
No, but I
don't really want anybody making an AT-AT.
He didn't exactly go back on his lawyers and say, oh, well, I think it's okay either.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think
so. We've
derailed.
Yeah, we've derailed a little bit, but this conversation is still awesome. So,
I hope it makes it into the cast. Actually, I would just watch the entire the Star Wars musical that those students put together.
Wait, really?
Years ago, I think it was like, you know, 98 or something like that. They did a Star Wars musical, and it basically made fun of a lot of other musicals and stuff. So like there's a big musical number that Han Solo sings in the cantina about the Millennium Falcon, and it's pretty much Grease Lightning from Grease. And there's a bunch of other like references like that. But Lucasfilm sent them a cease and desist letter and they stopped it. But somebody recently put the entire thing recorded from like a handheld camera on the internet. So you could probably find it and watch the whole thing. It's like, you know, an hour and 45 minutes long, but it's pretty great.
Wow.
Lucasfilm always ruining things like its own series.
That's too far off the bandwagon. Let's get back to the.
That's right. We should never discuss religion, politics, or Star Wars prequels.
Pretty much. Amen.
Okay. I mean, our next point is the big talking point of like the last couple weeks, month or so. You know, just everything that's going on with Sony.
PSN is back. Sorry.
Yeah, our first point being that the PSN is back, but that doesn't mean Sony isn't in a lot of trouble.
Well, the PlayStation Network just went back up in Japan. It's been up for a while here in the United States, but Japan has a lot stricter rules, and they really wanted Sony to prove that it was safe before they would let them bring it up in Japan. But yeah, they're still in trouble. I think I read somewhere that they lost something near $170 million or something over this whole thing.
You know, they have
Congress. When you lose the security of over 100 million accounts, it's going to take a bit of a chunk out of the wallet.
Yeah.
It's finally back up, except for the store, which is not. But when it does, Sony has actually said that they were going to offer people some free games to say, we're sorry. And while the games list that they offered is kind of depressing because they're mostly games that are either really cheap or games that people probably already own, but they're letting people download two games for the PlayStation 3 and two for the PSP if they have that. List of games. So you see Little Big Planet, Infamous, Wipeout HD, Super Stardust HD, and Dead Nation.
Yeah, and on Sony Online Entertainment as well, they did this for the DC Universe Online for the PS3 users as well. So they gave a free month of gameplay as well as reimbursed for the downtime, so basically 45 days in total of free game time.
Mm-hmm. That's cool.
Cool. Yeah. But no, they're in a lot of trouble. I read somewhere on Kotaku that they have to testify before Congress about how they let the security slip so easily.
Yeah, they had to send a thing to a letter to Congress. And
yeah, here it is.
And it's like I don't even remember how many pages it was. It was long.
They're not out of the water yet. A lot of the other Sony websites keep getting hammered by hackers. It makes you wonder if this is ever going to end or if they're just going to keep getting picked on. Well, speaking of the Sony store, I was reading that they were, in lieu of the fact that they're so far behind schedule in the release dates for a lot of their, you know, their stuff that was going to come up on the store, they're going to do 3 updates a week. So they're just going to do multiple updates a week and until they get caught up, which means there's a whole slew of games coming on the PSN.
You know what I wish they would finally do is just flip the switch and start letting PS2 games come on the PSN.
Yeah, I know. Why aren't they doing that yet? Well, actually, I don't know.
There probably needs to be some kind of emulator installed on the PS3 to run.
And most PS3s don't have that emulator built into it anymore.
Yeah.
But I'm sure there's a way to do it. It's in the same way that you can install DirectX on Windows and then therefore start gaming. I'm sure there's a way to do it on a low level.
You know, I don't understand.
They'd probably just have to distribute the emulator over a PlayStation Network and then let the
or make PS2 or build games. It into the game installs.
Yeah, yeah. That. Mm. But you know,
that, sort of like, you know, we have an emulator that allows us to watch Netflix. You know, it's since it's essentially, you know, a purpose-built computer, it should be capable of handling things like that. At least that's my thought.
Yeah, you can watch Netflix on anything these days. My mom recently got her an iPhone, finally, and that's one of the things she's been doing, is watching Netflix movies on her iPhone.
Yep. Oh, yeah, me too. Yeah.
Same here.
PlayStation 3. It does everything.
The 3DS. 3DS, even.
Actually, PlayStation 3 doesn't do everything.
Like, keep your security data secret and safe?
It doesn't play PlayStation 2 games.
That was a shot at their ad campaign, Chad.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
You almost feel like they had it coming when they go with an ad that says it only does everything. Like, yeah. you almost know that, like, there is some sort of big, hubris.
Yeah. Did you see the T-shirt that's on Penny Arcade that says it only does 807-10A06, which is the error of the shutdown? I would almost buy that shirt, but I don't wear that.
Yeah, it's a very topical
shirt. Oh, come on, John, give it to your geeky side.
I don't do that kind of stuff.
I think the term Kotaku used was it only does identity theft, which I liked.
Yeah. So there's people talking about this is a stepping ahead, but I just want to mention it because of Sony. There's people talking about E3 and what Sony's focus will be at E3. And I wonder, you know, are they going to have the store back up by E3? Because
I doubt it.
That's going to be kind of a big blow to them if they don't have that. I just wonder if they're going to have Kevin Butler up there making some kind of a spin on it.
I don't know. I think it's really shaky ground because normally Sony would probably deal with these kinds of situations by coming up and making jokes about it. But I don't know how well that's going to fly in front of this audience.
Crowd of angry fans.
I think it'll go over just as well as the guy went Ridge Racer.
Yeah.
If you remember that.
Oh, God.
I think he was trying to get everyone chanting it, and it just didn't fly.
Yeah,
I can see it now. Headline: this year at E3, an angry mob. So and so and so. Yeah.
Did you guys read the cartoon that was on Penny Arcade about it, where they were pretending to be Kevin Butler?
No.
It says, "Dear PlayStation, how come I can't play any of my games online? Online? You mean yawnline? The single player is where the real action is. Why play boring weirdo losers when you could play with yourself? I mean," and then the page says it only does the 807-10A06.
Yeah.
I want that comic strip for posterity reasons.
So
Penny Arcade.
Are we through the Sony hack stuff?
Yeah, I think even normal people that don't really follow all this stuff online have heard enough. It's been picked up by so many news sources that I think everyone's pretty well versed in all that stuff that's going on.
Well, one thing I'd like to say is I think people have thought that I have this desire to see Sony thwarted by this hack, and I don't. But, you know, I think that those of us who thought that it would, you know, come and go and be a blip were mistaken. I think this is going to be a major blow to them.
Yeah.
And I don't know what the long term results are going to be. I still like my PlayStation. I still like the games I have on it, but it's just, it's going to be something. And there's people who are, you know, returning their PlayStation to get an Xbox, which I think is kind of silly, but whatever, you know.
Yeah. We also didn't mention that. Sonet, which is another Sony company, also got hacked.
You mean Sony Online or
Sonet, another Sony company?
A lot of their websites just keep getting hit by hackers.
Which suggests they have kind of a similar security measure across all platforms. Which is why
this seemed to be actually a different type of attack because this one.
Do you think that maybe they've just pissed off hackers?
I think they do. And people like kicking the guy that's on the ground. It's because the internet is really mean and vindictive, and hackers are kind of part of that culture.
Yeah, I think that.
I know a lot of hackers that were on, like, 4chan, sites like that, were sort of very upset about the George Hotz thing. And, you know, I actually went to high school with George Hotz, so I was a little upset about it, too, to be honest.
Really?
But, yes.
Huh.
Yeah.
Intriguing.
Fascinating.
That I did. But, you know, I actually don't really have that much to say about
it. How do we know that you're not George Haas?
Good question.
Well, the thing that kills me is that people are talking about, like, George Haas's hack as though it was, like, the prelude to Sony going down. Like, one has anything to do with the other. Yeah, it has nothing to do with the other.
All of these disparate elements are part of some highly orchestrated, you know, ambush, like the D-Day invasion for hackers.
Yeah, so the short and the long of it is probably going to end up with
the P-Day invasion for PlayStation.
We're probably going to end up with mandatory online connectivity for consoles, plus, you know, long license keys
we have to type in. We need to give them any more excuses to work in that direction.
Oh, God.
there is going to be major
Genathus, you can't type it in because it's on a console.
They have keyboards on screen, a virtual keyboard, as it were.
But that's still a pain in the butt because you have to navigate with the controller.
Okay. Moving on.
There's no limit with digital rights management how far the companies are going to. They don't feel any kind of remorse of making it a pain in the butt. They don't. But in some cases, they've actually learned their lessons with, like, iTunes and Amazon, where you can get music without digital rights management, and then the digital music has kind of taken off from since then. All the people, like, I see customers with computers I work on who still have LimeWire and whatever installed, and they say, where can I go to download music that won't, you know, have viruses? I'm like, iTunes and Amazon. Well, that costs money. I'm like, well, that's the cost of no viruses.
and it's morally correct, so...
Well, that and also, it's all the tags will be correct. I don't need to hear every rarity song.
Either.
Yeah, won't be laced with viruses. And it also, I used to use a particular site years ago. I will not name the site, but I have some songs that I've replaced from those days with Amazon songs because the Amazon audio quality songs are better than those old other ones. And so that's the place where I'm drawing the line. I've actually replaced almost all of my collection with legitimate sources if I can find them. I do have a couple that I can't find in legitimate sources yet. Mm-hmm. I do like obscure stuff, I admit it. So, speaking of obscure, we have the secretive Ubisoft CEO got to sit in on a Project Cafe meeting. And he says that it's so powerful that he can port existing Xbox 360 and PS3 titles to the new Nintendo platform. I am impressed with the hardware level that he's claiming it has, but I'm kind of like, is there a point to this? I mean, if you wanted to play, say, Assassin's Creed, you know, the series on either the Xbox or the PlayStation 3, haven't you already done that?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I mean, are you going, oh, if they would just port it to Wii? I mean, is there anybody doing that?
Not only that, but did you guys hear that Project Cafe is supposedly going to have a high-definition virtual console?
Oh, man.
I don't follow what that means.
No. Well, here's what developers see a new console launch as a way to make a lot of quick and easy money. Because if you can get a launch title for a system, it's a guaranteed, you know, super seller, even if it's a really crappy game. And I think of games like what's that Red Steel that came out on the Wii, that was, none of those games were any good, but they all sold like gangbusters because they were the only things available at launch for the system. So I guess companies are thinking we can,
wouldn't that ship have kind of sailed on these titles that are already, you know, are so long out there and established that porting over. And another thing is, I think the Wii is a different offering to the PlayStation 3 and the Xbox 360.
It is.
And because their volume is so high, the Xbox 360 and PlayStation 3 are trying to emulate them, hence the movement controls, which, you know, to dubious effect in any case. But I don't think that they cater to the same kind of markets, and therefore talking about porting games from one of these, you know, what we call the hardcore gaming platforms to the new Nintendo platform doesn't seem like it would be the opportune thing. Or is that just me?
The most anticipated game upcoming for the 3DS is an old N64 game. So, I mean, I just think it's, you know, money is what it comes down to.
They can slap
on all the DLC and they'll change a couple of things and add a couple of new missions and they'll call it, you know, L.A. Noire Special Edition on Project.
Well, also, is there any reason to one-up the current 360 PS3 platforms? Is there any use to that?
What do you mean?
Because
you mean like...
Well, Well, you know that Microsoft and Sony are at work on their next platform. You know, I mean, whether they say it or not or admit it or not, they are. Yeah. They're at work on it.
Yeah.
How far out it is going to be, you know, a different story. But they're moving forward, and whatever they have next is going to be, you know, X amount of power above the current generation. I mean, if they were to, say, make, as an example, the PS3 has the GeForce 7000 series graphics card in it, essentially. And so we're at, I don't know how many generations later on the PC. So even if you just put today's, like the current generation PC hardware into a new PlayStation 4, it would still be, you know, a certain quantifiable leap over the current platform. In which case, if the Nintendo is only a little faster than the current consoles, it really isn't going to be a force in the industry come the next generation.
Well, honestly, I think
it comes down to the hardware, because all the rumors talking about Project Cafe's special like touchscreen controllers and all kinds of other weird rumors, it sounds like they're doing something hardware wise outside the normal realm of thinking. So
which once again, porting these games doesn't seem opportune to me.
Yeah, I don't know. Well, I guess we're gonna have to wait till
E3 slightly bigger market, you know. Like, I remember on a couple different occasions I was playing games and I only had a Wii at that point because, you know, I was lame. you know, I'd say, well, you know, damn, this game isn't even that, you know, high graphics. If only, I'm sorry, you know, this game doesn't even use that much complicated graphics. You know, if only somebody had, you know, found a way of porting it to Wii. And obviously I don't think that so much anymore since my PC is fairly strong, not that strong. And I do also have a 360, so that isn't a problem anymore. But I know, you know, other people must have thought that now and then.
or the Wii completely, you know, has a completely different demographic, you know.
Well, it does. I mean, it's more aimed at kids and family oriented playing. Whereas,
and you know, slightly off topic, there's a, I guess a lot of companies want in, like in the movie industry, they want into like the kids scene. So there's a lot of kids movies, and I guess there aren't a lot of people that go to like a kids movie by themselves is the whole point. You know, so when a kid goes to a kids movie, it is the kid and at least one adult. So, you know, it's a little different than, you know, just, you know, the random couples that go to horror movies, which I guess supposedly are having like a decrease. But the whole point is, like, I think like there's a lot of market in the family friendly side of things, which I think was where
the Wii was
the
going.
Little Avatar. Yeah, where the avatars came with Xbox 360, the Kinect having a lot of kid games. I mean, these companies are starting to see the writing on the wall.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, given the difference between a product that provides entertainment solely for the child or something, you know, the parent or guardian is going to have to endure anyways, or something that provides entertainment for the child and the, you know, parent or guardian that's having to go through that with
what's always
them
fun is things like is, a good, you know, example is like the movie The Incredibles from Pixar.
Love
where
it.
Like there's a lot of humor in there that will bypass the kids who are watching, but the adults will also enjoy.
That's right. And a lot of old Disney movies do that too. You know, I mean,
really just anything by Pixar, a lot of things by Disney, but you know, especially things by Pixar because they're so well written that even though, you know, they're sort of designed to be for kids, there's still a lot there for adults to appreciate.
Well, there's adult humor, but it's written in such a way that the kids don't even know it's there. It just goes
it's not adult
over their heads.
Yeah, exactly.
But even like
you have to be an adult to notice it.
Something like Doctor Who, I mean, it's mainly like a kids / family show. But one of the reasons adults like it so much is because the writing is usually just so good that it remains interesting. And that's actually one of the things I think is that if people just took kids more seriously and stopped trying to feed them, you know, flowery crap, then, you know, it would be able to reach a larger crowd.
But we reach back to the point where, you know, I just hate kids, you know, so I don't mind stuff that just caters to me as an adult.
They hate you too.
Well, that's why he owns cats, because he doesn't want children, so he satisfies for animals.
He's the crazy cat guy.
You know, the thing is because I won't spend a lot of time talking down to children, they tend to actually like me because I don't, you know, is that, oh, did you get a boo-boo? You know, like, I don't do that. I won't do that. And I mean, I baby talk to my dog because my dog doesn't speak English. But we're a little off the track here. So I don't know. As the Ubisoft CEO seems kind of excited about the new hardware, and it's going to be more powerful than the current generation of the hardcore consoles. Except we agree that the demographic is not going to be the same. In which case, why is that really a comparison? But it's good to know, you know, roughly where they think it's going to be. But,
the very least, Project Cafe will be great because it'll put pressure on Microsoft and Sony to push forward with their next gen consoles.
Hopefully, yeah. Though, they'll be a lot smarter than they were with the Xbox and PlayStation 3.
Well, it's one of those things. It's hard to see. It's hard to, you know, call the ball when it's in the air. It's who knew that, you know, streaming was going to turn out what it was. That's why, you know, Netflix was added on after the fact, that kind of thing.
I was reading an article that Netflix makes up for like 60% of all the bandwidth used on the internet now.
Oh, jeez.
Wow.
That's why a lot of the bandwidth caps are in place on
I know. ISPs really hate that news.
Yeah. Well, there's quite a few. I know of quite a few cable cutters myself. People who are like, well, I would be one myself if it weren't for the family I live with. But they use the DVR and the TV. Otherwise, I wouldn't have TV service. I have a measly 250 gigabytes per month, which I've only ever come as close as 160 gigabytes. So I've never come in within spitting distance of that number. But I can see that if I were to really, really lean on Netflix, how that number could drastically decrease. Mm. In any case, let's move on to other showings of movies and TV shows. Lots of big-budget superhero movies this summer. Thor, X-Men, Captain America, Green Lantern.
To name a few.
I saw Thor just recently.
How'd you like it?
How was it?
Yeah. It was pretty decent. I mean, you know, it wasn't by far, you know, like the most amazing movie I've ever seen or anything, but... you know, it was worth seeing in the theater.
The sense I get is that if anybody was going to play Thor, he was sort of like the best guy for the job.
My wife was swooning over him through the whole movie.
I've never been a big comic book guy, so, like, I didn't have the source material to really compare or anything.
Well, yeah, I've never really read Thor comics very much, but, you know, I had to take a bunch of mythology classes in order to get my English degree. But I'm excited to see so many superhero movies coming out. And it's weird. It feels like they're kind of like stepping on each other's toes because there's so many. And I kind of wonder about some of these movies. Like, I wonder how Captain America will play in other markets aside from the United States, because it's not like he's Captain Japan or Captain.
Yeah. Being one of the people who both enjoy and naysay superhero movies, I think Captain America is the one that hits the closest for me, where like the hero seems a little, you know, dirty, and by that I mean he actually like gets salty and goes through some stuff, whereas it seems like a lot of the other stuff I see from like Green Lantern and Thor, everything's kind of plasticky and abstract and a little too sterile.
Again, I mentioned this in a previous podcast, but it may have been in TCT, but I'm excited for Captain America because it's a superhero movie set in a period, like, it's a period piece. How awesome is that? I mean, that's like the first period superhero movie we've ever had, ever. Like, I don't think that exists.
And the first real Captain America shield we've seen in the movie.
Well, that too. But...
Well, it's really, I mean,
there was the 70s movie that had he had the motorcycle with the shield that was actually, like, the front window of it or something. And then we had the terrible, terrible movie that they made... B movie that they had where he, like, you know how his in the helmet his ears stick out? In the B movie, they actually, because his ears stick out, they put plastic fake ears over his ears. Uh-huh. Like, that's how terribly cheesy the movie was. And I really like that they did a different rendition of the suit where, you know, it's not quite
it's actually functional.
Yeah. The stripes are not,
really,
you know,
cool. That's the thing. Yeah, I really like the way the suit looks.
It looks less red and more brown, actually, a lot of it. If they had put on the, what do you call those boots that he used to wear? The Buccaneer boots? If they put Buccaneer boots on, like, that's just not going to work. I mean, it's, in a lot of these cases, I think the movies that do the best are the ones that do what I call them the more plausible updates. The Dark Knight is a perfect example. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I'm hoping that Captain America makes it fly. I have a lot of trouble swallowing the concept of Green Lantern.
Yeah, well, I've never really cared much for the DC Universe heroes, aside from Batman. From the get-go, I thought Superman is just kind of boring as a hero, and a lot of the, like, the Flash and some of the other ones do just seem so kind of boring by comparison to some of the Marvel superheroes. But yeah. I like how both companies, both DC and Marvel, are making all these movies that are kind of cogs towards a greater story. We got, in Marvel, they have the Avengers movie coming out, and it's going to have all the characters that they've been setting up in all these other movies, like Iron Man and the Hulk and Captain America and Thor,
and
all gonna,
plus it's being written, it's being directed by Joss Whedon, which is awesome.
Yeah, but they're making a Justice League movie that's kind of the same concept but for the DC heroes.
You know, but there's one other concept I think we should mention, though. With a lot of superhero movies and sequels, it seems like, I could be wrong, it seems like every superhero movie seems to run off the rails around the third installment.
Yeah.
Superman, Batman, I'm not talking about Dark Knight, I'm talking about Batman from 1989, followed by Batman Returns, and then the Batman with nipples.
I think we can blame Joel Schumacher for that.
But that's what, for some reason, that was what Warner Brother wanted. But the X-Men, Spider-Man, it just seems like every one of these ones, they just keep running off the rails in the third movie.
Which is why I'm sort of looking very closely at at the Dark Knight Returns, which is going to be the third and apparently final.
Was it Dark Knight Rises?
Oh, Dark Knight Rises. I'm sorry.
Yeah, Returns is the graphical
of the Christopher Nolan directed Batman series, yeah. And he says he's really excited about it. He says, like, he's made it so that, like, it forms this perfect trilogy, and, like, he thinks it's just really good, and he wasn't going to make the movie unless he thought he was going to be able to find a good script, and then suddenly he, finger quotes, cracked it and was super happy with it. So I don't know. I mean, I generally trust him because he's a really good director. He hasn't really made a bad movie.
I think the point Janathus was making about the third kind of falling off, that's usually when, like, just a committee at a studio starts writing the movie. That happened with X-Men 3. It didn't even have any of the same writing staff from the first two. They just kind of...
Spider-Man, they shoehorned in Venom when we could have made the movie about Venom.
Right, and that wasn't what the writer and director of the movie wanted to do either. It's just, I think that's when the point where the greed starts really setting in by the third installment, and the studio says, well, let's do all this stuff because it'll make us money.
And now because of that, we have this terrible reboot happening, which, and I say terrible because I have absolutely no feeling that this is going to be a good movie at all.
I don't know. Like, I haven't seen enough of it to gain any sense for it. A perfect example of something that went astray that I'm glad didn't make it off the ground was the new Wonder Woman TV show.
Oh, yes.
I mean, the girls got the build, I guess, but it's just, I remember there was something where somebody was saying about, I guess they complained about the suit because she had blue leggings and blue boots, and they changed the leggings so they're not made of, like, rubber, and the boots are now red. But I guess just all the stuff that they put together for the pilot just didn't fly. And I'm kind of glad, because the more I heard about it, the worse off it sounds.
People like to think that Nerd Rage killed that show, but I think it was more that, I think on a studio level, they saw that the scripts weren't working and that it just wasn't turning out very good for what they were putting into it money-wise.
No, I don't think Nerd Rage killed the show. I think for sure that it didn't look like a package that would fly. And I think it hammers another nail into the concept, like you just said, that the DC universe does not make the best characters for these kinds of things. And the story that they were working with for her was completely revamped from, like, Wonder Woman's, you know, background story in the universe.
Where DC really hits it off is in animation. There's tons of animated DC movies on Netflix, and you think of, like, the Batman animated series and even the Superman animated series, and all that stuff works really well. It's just Marvel is the ones who know how to make the good movies.
They also set the scale pretty nice. It's the same problem they have, like, taking a little off the rails further is like the Force Unleashed, where like it's just we're just reaching too far for what the Jedi powers could do to make the game seem feasible and enjoyable. Mm-hmm. Like with Superman Returns, he picks up a whole island and flies it into space, even though the island's laced with kryptonite. Somehow he can do that. You know, meanwhile in the Superman show, the cartoon, he can barely stop a crane from crashing down on this lady. You know, like that's where like dealing with the scale of this, the hero scaling a lot of these superpowers back to be a little less super makes it a lot more enjoyable of a conflict.
Yeah,
to,
well, I mean, if there's no challenge, it gets bland. Yeah, and another thing was, even though I did like the Thor movie, one big thing that I would say that I noticed was this, it seemed like they were trying to fit too much story into too little time. Everything was kind of rushed along.
Since they're setting up the Avengers movie, I can say that.
Mm-hmm. So
the Strategic Homeland Intervention and Enforcement and Logistics Division, or SHIELD. That is actually the only reason I want to see it is because that SHIELD dude from Iron Man's in it.
Yeah, and Hawkeye makes a brief cameo in that movie, though. My wife who watched it with me, she like, why did he pick the bow and arrow up instead of the gun? I'm like, because it's Hawkeye. He's supposed to use a bow and arrow. But she's like, who's Hawkeye? I'm like, yeah, that's the challenge that I think the Avengers movie is going to face.
Well, so long as they don't bring in the Submariner.
Namor.
I can't see that flying. I mean, they've revamped his outfit to be a little less girly, but it's I don't see it. But moving on in a complete gear shift here, we're going to talk about tech here. We do a lot of our podcasts by recording calls over Skype. Microsoft has bought Skype. And that puts a little tinge of fear in my heart over, the future of the podcast and the way we do things.
I think it's really funny that now, even after they announced it, like Microsoft hasn't done anything to Skype yet, but everyone's starting to blame Microsoft for all the problems Skype has already. Like, oh,
yeah,
it crashed on me, stupid Microsoft and your stupid Skype.
What if you don't know, they revamped the voice chat on Steam using Skype technology. And it's a great effect, although it kind of sucks on when you try to use the voice on Portal 2 because you can't use it during the load times, which is one of those cases where I'd rather have the voice call outside of the game instead of inside of the game.
Yeah.
So that it's always independent.
Yeah, we were getting constantly cut off at the loading screens. It was annoying.
Yeah, we finally said, screw it. Like, let's just get a Skype call going, and then we can continue talking. Because the loading screen's when you want to talk because you're bored. Mm-hmm. But I don't know, there's some interesting implications. I wish that they would kind of merge MSN and the Skype client. That way, you know, the friends I have on MSN are now on Skype. I would love that. But I don't think they're going to do that. But I would like them to. So if they would listen to me, do that, please, Microsoft.
Yeah, I'm sure they listen to the show.
So speaking of people being made to do things, Chinese prisoners are being forced to play massively multiplayer online games, farming gold for the good of China.
Well, of course. Everything is for the good of China.
Always for the good of the wardens anyway.
World of Warcraft is now punishment. Oh, I love it.
It's a big step up from that Filipino.
Wait, you're just realizing
those
this now?
Thriller.
It's interesting. What I've had a complete 180 shift on World of Warcraft. It was a good way to fill my time when I was like living alone in an apartment. I just didn't have any extra money to do anything, and I could afford $15 a month, so I just played WoW to fill the hours. But you know, I felt the void of all the games I wasn't playing, and so eventually when I stopped playing WoW, I was like, oh, I feel like it's let me go. I'm no longer in indentured servitude anymore. And that's the thing about it, is like it has, because of the social element, your friends that are in there, there is an element of like that keeps you in there enjoying it because your friends are there.
Yeah.
But if you were to judge the game by mechanics alone, it's really an incredible time sink. And I know games are all designed to be time wasters, but well, World of Warcraft, you get the sense, like here's a perfect example of how you can tell this. Like you have a quest in a certain area, you go and do the quest, you come back and turn the quest in. Okay, here's the next step on the quest. Go back to the same area you just went to, which is no longer clear because all the enemies have respawned, and now do this. Like, come on, you know, give me a string of quests to do in the same area, which is what we did, like, when we were grouping up and doing Borderlands. We would just take the quests, figure out what works best with the geography, and then kind of go through a pattern, do them all, and then turn in a bunch of quests. Perfect. That's the way it should be, because it's not designed to, like, waste as much of your dollars, essentially, playing it. Because World of Warcraft is designed for you to waste as much time as you can, because that keeps you paying. You
know? Yeah.
So
there's a point where it does get exhausting, and it does just, it becomes a chore. And that is
the, I like
that. That's where gold farmers come in. They waste all the time for you.
You know, I never had the kind of devotion to, like, give an MMO. I mean, if I didn't have the large amount of boredom on my hands like I had when I was in that apartment, you know, I would have never given WoW that kind of time. And I had the same problem with Guild Wars. I really wanted to, like, get through Guild Wars. And I eventually had to just throw in the towel. I just didn't have it anymore. But I actually did once buy from a gold farmer. Because trying to, like, farm stuff and get gold was taking so freaking long. All the prices were so high. Mm. World of Warcraft has really made a change on that. A lot. The player-driven economy has made things a little better on that front.
Well, yeah. All the same, if I was a prisoner, I'd rather be playing World of Warcraft and farming gold than, you know, breaking rocks with a hammer or something.
Well, you would, of course, have to figure out the most efficient way to do so, or do it the way they say is the most efficient way, whatever. But it's still kind of an entertaining notion.
It's really goofy.
I mean, just a note about, like, MMOs, you know, while we're on the subject, I feel like MMOs were the kind of thing that, like, I wanted to really do in high school, you know, when I was sort of starved for social attention because I didn't have that many friends. But, you know, really, I find that I get more enjoyment out of games when they're single player now. Like, I just enjoy the single player experience more, you know. I feel almost it's more relieving to sort of get away from sort of other people and enter the world of, which is why I kind of dislike the fact that, you know, a lot of developers think the best way to, hey, improve their games is by making them multiplayer. And I'm a little afraid of this announcement that went out recently that Valve kind of wants to only make multiplayer games from now on. That scares me a little bit because they're really good at
online
single player games.
Online? More like yawnline. Single player is where the real action is.
But I mean,
yeah,
in all serious.
I like both because they both have their merits. But, you know,
yeah, I well,
one
this,
or the,
this,
too much of one or the other kind of gets old.
This movement for, like, adding multiplayer to everything has been on for a long time, and it's been tacked on to a lot of games that I think, in my opinion, would have been much better without it. Like, I think Singularity would have been a lot more polished as a single-player game if they hadn't been wasting time tacking on a stupid multiplayer that nobody plays now.
Right, and there's the whole thing where a lot of those games, when they do tack on the multiplayer, it's done, and it's very sloppy, and
what I like, I like the concept. Like, if you have more than one NPC in the game, why can't it just be co-op? Why does it have? I mean, to me, that's like the perfect extension because it's the same game now, two people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I don't know why more games don't do that.
I love
Portal 2. Portal 2 gives the co-op, which I thought was very well fleshed out. Originally when I heard about the co-op, I was like, oh, now I've got to find somebody to play with. But when you do, it's awesome. Yeah.
Well, and what I like, too, is that the co-op is in addition and thus optional. So you don't have to do, you know, there isn't just co-op only, you know.
Yeah.
You can play on your own when you want to, when you can't find someone else to play with. But then you can do the co-op when you have friends.
Yeah, that's what
the single player, you know, mode in Portal 2 is actually, you know, brilliant. It's, you know, that's where
amazing.
The bulk of the enjoyment of the games come from.
When I bought Brink, I thought that I was going to get a single player, and they said it was going to have single player and multiplayer and co-op and, you know, player versus player, all that good stuff. But they didn't say it was all the same stuff, you know, just, you know, optionally swapping in bots for real player.
Right. That was basically how Unreal Tournament worked too. And Unreal
which I was going to say, like, well, Unreal Tournament is single player if you load it up with a bunch of bots, but that's not really single player.
Yeah. Well, moving on then.
Yes, I was going to try to figure out a good transition. So the moment is almost upon us.
Dum-dum-dum.
The E3 Electronic Gaming Expo, yes.
E3.
So I know that we all have zeroed in on our own particular news item of our own choosing. We all have our different focuses. So let's start with David. What has drawn your attention in regards to what's being announced and or covered at E3?
Oh, Tor, of course.
What is Tor?
The Old Republic.
Yeah, you need to get out of the habit of saying right. that on the podcast.
Yes, Star Wars The Old Republic, which, you know, is being made by BioWare.
Which you're disappointed with, but nevertheless, I'm still following.
Yeah, well, I don't know, it sounds like they're actually going to be updating the animations. Like, I saw some more updated videos, and some of the animations were a little bit more polished than what I'd seen in the past. So some of my disillusionment has dropped there. I saw some previews of...
Are they updating with dismemberment?
No dismemberment, unfortunately. Aww. And can we
at least have droids we can dismember?
Jeez. So I also saw a video of their space game, which I kind of like because it's kind of like a tunnel shooter thing, so it's not overly, you know, open or complicated as far as an MMO goes. It is more of a side game. Which
kind of like the shooter portions of Knights of the Old Republic.
Yeah, it's very similar to that, actually. You know, you're in your ship, and there's a little bit more freedom in that, though, whereas like in Knights of the Old Republic, you're basically just in the turret shooting. The Old Republic, you can actually control some of the ship's movement within the... virtual tube, I guess. It's
that
kind
does,
of
that
like
does sound a little 3D arcadey.
Yeah, it is very arcade. I was actually just going to say it's very similar to what basically a 3D version of Asteroids would be like.
Hopefully, it's pulled off a lot better than my mind is imagining.
It looked like it worked really well, actually.
Well, so let's move on. Jeff, what's coming up in E3 has caught your attention?
I think the thing that I'm most excited about is all this news about BioShock Infinite, or Infinity, or what is it? It's Infinite, right?
Infinite.
Yeah.
Okay, that's coming out, because that game, I didn't even realize all the stuff and mechanics that they had in it, but some of the stuff they were showing at the little preview for E3 that they invited a bunch of game journalists to was that you're escorting this character around Elizabeth, but she's kind of the one you saw in the early trailer that seemed to have the weird powers. But apparently there's a whole mechanic in the game where she can rip open rifts through space-time throughout the world and summon objects from other eras to help you. Like there'll be a battle or whatever, and she can open a rift and a train from a totally different era will come careening into the enemies that you're fighting and other weird stuff like that. But some of the examples that the reviewers were talking about really got me excited, because they're really thinking outside the box with these rifts, these portals.
Amelia Earhart went.
one of the examples they talk about is how the girl tries to save a horse or something that's dying by opening a rift to try to help the horse. And in doing so, she accidentally sends your character to the 1980s, where you're on a street and people are in front of a movie theater waiting to see Return of the Jedi in the movie theater. And tears for tears. And everybody's dressed up in 80s get-ups and stuff before you get sucked back. It's it just sounds
that
completely...
That is so cool.
It sounds so...
That is amazing.
Bonkers. I'm that really so excited cool. to see what kind of things and ideas that they put into this game, because it sounds like they're just going to go all out.
Well, I'm glad for that, because...
Oh, my God.
I mean, part of me is a little, grumpy over the whole, having announced a game coming out in 2012 and freaking 2010. You know, so that, like, better be freaking awesome. Because as a perfect example of a game announced too far ahead of time, in my opinion, is that the last Guardian for the PlayStation 3 announced at E3 2009.
Wasn't that game supposed to be out like 2 years ago?
It was supposed to be out at Christmas 2009, and it was pushed back, and now it's pushed back to 2012 now.
You know, a game that was announced too early.
Yeah, it's just like, did you guys, did you announce it when you started development and you thought for some reason? I always wonder, like, did they announce it at the start of development? They thought, oh, development will take 6 months. I'm like, I don't know what they were thinking or what problem they've come up. I mean, I have no idea, but it just, it irks me because the two reasons I bought a PlayStation 3 was for The Last Guardian and Uncharted 2. And, you know, I have played some other games on the PlayStation 3, but those were the main reasons I bought it. And so I'm still 50% unfulfilled on why I bought one. But, Patrick, what has your eye for the upcoming E3?
Surprisingly, and for the first time in years, I am once again excited for Nintendo's show. At E3, mostly because of Project Cafe. I want to know, you know, more about it. I want to know what it's like. I want to know what games maybe they have lined up for it, you know? But also because, you know what, they announced Skyward Sword like a while ago, like a couple years ago. And, you know, ever since then, like, really, there's been no information about it. And it was originally supposed to be out in, like, December of 2010, and that never happened. And they said, oh, okay, we'll do it, you know, 2011. We need a little bit more time. And then they just never talked about it ever again. And I want to know why. Like, they just are not talking about it. And it looks interesting enough, if a little boring. But, you know, I want to know more about it, because it doesn't look like they've really told us anything. The trailer that they gave us was kind of half-assed, to be honest. With just a couple screenshots and no real storytelling or anything. It's not like what they did with Twilight Princess, where they were very expressive with everything they did.
The screenshot I saw the other day from it looks like this Link will be a little more grown up looking.
Well, yeah, it's the models from Twilight Princess, but given a little bit of cel shading to give it sort of like a French painting brought to life, which I kind of like.
Yeah, I noticed that part about it too.
They're sort of trying to do what they did with Tangled, and I kind of like that approach.
I like
it. Yeah, I don't mind cel shading. I kind of like cel shading. For some reason, it allows you to maintain them abstract, but still find the environments more immersive. As a perfect example, Borderlands is strangely immersive, even though it has a very comic book look.
Yeah,
the great thing about Wind Waker is that that game is going to look beautiful, like, forever. Because of how intensely cel-shaded it is, because of its very stylized appearance, it doesn't look dated.
That's what the same thing that why WoW's style works so well is because it's stylized. They're not trying to be realistic, because the realistic attempts are the things that age so fast. Perfect example, there was a game that I played back in the 99 or 2000 called Rune, which is a third-person melee combat PC-only game with things like dismemberment, which, you know, I loved, weapons that, you know, have, you know, you have a health bar and your weapon has a health bar because the weapon, you know, can only chop through the sternum of so many enemies before finally it's just no good anymore. So, you know, but I played the demo lately and it's still fun and holds up pretty well, but it's very clunky looking compared to today's games because it's trying to look real, you know.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
At the time it was awesome for, you know, nothing touched what the kind of level this game achieved, but now it just seems so... I don't know. I feel like at some point in the future, we're going to look back at Gears of War and go, God, the game is so primitive. It's so obvious what the animation points are.
Well, you got to use your hands. That's like a baby's toy.
Yeah.
That's been the trend with games, I think, ever since basically DirectX and OpenGL became, you know...
More and more real, attempting to be more and more real.
Yeah, and you know, basically allowed games to really...
I still think that we should be going to the piecemeal way of approach to gaming. Not so much like, you know, we've got physics engines. There should be like companies out there that specialize in certain things like hand animations or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things I've always noticed as weaknesses in animations and games. The hands always look weird, like bear paws or, you know, these clay shapes that are meant to look like hands that have been twisted into the shapes that are necessary.
Speech
for the
animations, too.
speech animations, which I think L.A. Noire really pushed the bar on that one.
Yeah.
So these are the kind of things, like, if we could just get a bunch of different companies that kind of sell these parts, and then each company who develops the game can just assemble the parts they require and then do their own creative stuff. I was watching a video on the production of Uncharted 2, and they said that they had pretty much fleshed out what they could do, so they spent more time developing the game, less time actually having to, like, you know, R&D their tech. And that's the kind of thing I think is really good for, like, companies that use established engines like Unreal Engine 3 and what have you.
Mm-hmm.
So in the case of E3, there's a bunch of stuff that I've got my eye on. And, you know, there's also what unpredictable thing is going to pop out of all the companies that release games are going to not tell you about until they tell you at their conferences. But the one that has my eye, the one that I know is going to be in my game this year, is the next Assassin's Creed. It's going to be, again, like I've mentioned many times before, it's going to be an evolution, not a revolution, but it's going to add just enough to be good for me, and those games give me hour after hour of enjoyable gameplay, and without the slightest reservation, Assassin's Creed 2 is my game of the year that year.
Mm.
So, Brotherhood, not so much, but still just as fun.
The multiplayer was really fun in Brotherhood.
I never even touched the multiplayer. That's not what the game is for. It has nothing to do with me at all.
I haven't played the multiplayer Brotherhood either, but I really loved the story throughout both of them, along with the gameplay.
I really liked how Brotherhood polished the Assassin's Creed 2 experience,
mm-hmm.
but I almost feel like even though it is a large, expansive game, it still kind of feels like it should be Assassin's Creed 2 DLC Brotherhood that just, you know, happens to cost as much as the whole game is what it kind of feels like to me. But this new one's going to be a completely new setting. We're going back to the Middle East. We're following the steps left by Altair, the protagonist from the first game. Of course, the suit is going to be very different. It looks very Arabian and what have you. So I can't wait to dive in and play that game. And it's funny, like, I'm looking forward to more information, but I don't need any more information. Like I can pre-order it now. I'm going to get it.
Its reputation has preceded itself.
Yeah. I mean, there are a few things that Ubisoft, some problems that showed up with Brotherhood. There were some slight sound issues that popped up here and there. And the game appears to be chugging a little more on the Xbox 360 than Assassin's Creed 2 did.
I noticed several times throughout Brotherhood, I had the sound was going ahead in the cinematics of the actual video.
Yeah, so there is some definite, you know, they rushed it out kind of thing. But you have to understand, like, they have a massive development force behind Assassin's Creed. That's how they were able to get out such a good game in a year anyway.
Well, the credits were, at least for Brotherhood, were like 15, 20 minutes long.
I know.
It was ridiculous.
But, you know, to their credit, they did well with expanding on Assassin's Creed. Assassin's Creed was very good, but it had a Xbox 360 launch title kind of feel to it, where it was a little clunky but still a very good concept. But after you play Assassin's Creed 2, it's like you don't even want anything to do with Assassin's Creed. It just, I've had it a lot where I play a sequel and I no longer want to play the first game because I enjoyed the sequel so much more.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's the way sequels should be. On another note, whenever I talk to people in gaming forums and game communities, they always have a very negative appraisal of sequels being announced at E3. Do any of you have that same perspective?
I don't know. I disagree. Not for any particular reason, but I don't really find that true.
I mean, if it was a sequel, like, let's say if it was like the 15th game in a series, okay, I would be like, okay, it's time to try something new. That's kind of my thoughts towards what's happened with Final Fantasy.
Right. When you see Friday the 13th part 12 or something, you're like, okay.
Yeah, maybe it's time to move on.
Yeah.
But, like, I think, you know, three games or even six games in a series is fine. But I think these people's perspective is that, you know, why don't you do something original? I have the same perspective with the movie with a cinema where you know we keep having old movies that I've grown up with being remade. I'm like, it wasn't that long ago that movie was, you know, right. New.
They're remaking RoboCop and Total Recall, both with Colin Farrell. Believe it or not, RoboCop. Yeah.
The infuriating thing, as I mentioned before, is the fact that they're rebooting the Spider-Man film series, like, only a couple of years after they just made it.
But like, then they're saying they're not rebooting. They're saying it's not a reboot.
What? Yeah. But it's different people.
Or they're saying, or it's his son or whatever, I don't know. But
yeah.
They've made claims that it's not a reboot.
Well, no, but it is, though. Because, like, it's a completely different cast.
So on the flip side, so we almost, like, would prefer if they had kind of kept going forward because there was still steam left, which is my point. Like, I don't mind sequels at all.
Well, a good example, Tron Legacy, where it's very clearly a sequel because it follows up the events that happened in the first movie, but it's also kind of a reboot at the same time.
With a little bit of one of Patrick's favorite words, a little bit of retconning.
Yeah.
They could have had something completely that doesn't need the previous movie at all. Because, truth be told, anyone who sees Tron Legacy and decides to watch the first movie for, like, more backstory is in for a sour disappointment.
Yeah.
Like, one of the levels that really shows me one of the areas in the movie that I think is funny is the guy is showing him all the stuff he can do with his little disc, which is obviously a Frisbee.
No. So... And all the inconsistent glow patterns and all their suits, because it's very clearly, and the fact that everybody has to be recorded because of how the digital process, where they all had to record all the actors in black and white. So it looks like somebody scribbled over an old 1940s.
Yeah.
Detective flick or something.
So, yeah, like I said, it has not aged well, and I'm glad they did a sequel to it. But on the flip side, it seems a little strange. Like, it could have been something they could have redone after all that period of time.
Mm-hmm.
And it is essentially something they redid after all that period of time. But I don't have a negative appraisal of sequels. I don't like when sequels are not done by the studio that did the first game. On the same case, like, we have Modern Warfare 3 coming out, and by name, Infinity Ward is behind it, but the people who made Infinity Ward great are not there. In which case, and Activision has rejiggered some of their studios and brought in three studios. So three studios worked on Modern Warfare 3. I would be shocked if that game is not a buggy mess from hell.
Yeah.
So I won't be touching that with at all, not on any level.
I don't know. Games that are made by different, you know, like sequels that are made by a different set of developers can be good. But I think it's more of the exception rather than the rule.
Yeah. Now, there's another a point that we were talking about earlier about with the PC gaming versus console gaming. You know how we talk about, like, the menus and everything being difficult? That used to be, like, one of the bywords of PC gaming. Like, you know, this is for us. This is PC gaming. This is not for the console tards kind of deal. So... If there's some adversity mixed in, is that really a problem? I don't know. I look at it both ways. Like, I hear Witcher, which I have yet to play. I've had it downloaded forever. I have never fired it up because I hear it so hard. I'm like, I kind of don't. I had to be in a mood for that kind of a challenge.
I hear it's a really pretty looking game. Like, it's really pushing the graphics and stuff.
Not The Witcher 2. Witcher 1. Well, I have Witcher 1.
Oh, okay.
I don't have Witcher
2.
And I'm not going to play 2 until I have 1, which is another funny thing, is all these sequels that have hit consoles that didn't see the first one. Crysis 2, there was never a Crysis on the consoles. Far Cry 2. Far Cry was on the previous Xbox. I don't know if it was on the Xbox.
I think 2. Hitman 2 coming out on the PS2 when the original game was only a PC game.
Yeah. This is a lot of these things. That don't the console players feel a little... jilted that they didn't get to play the whole series? But then again, you know, after you play the sequel, the first game seems kind of pointless. As a matter of fact, like, I almost wish Assassin's Creed 2 had Assassin's Creed and a name after it, and not Assassin's Creed 2.
Well, that was something I felt about Brotherhood, is that it should have been called Assassin's Creed 2 Brotherhood, or because it's very clearly like a spinoff of Assassin's Creed 2. I mean, what are they going to do when they want to make a game like that for Assassin's Creed 3. I mean, how are people going to, just from titles alone, distinguish between all these games? You look at the Wikipedia page for Assassin's Creed and all the spin-off games, it's a real mess. I can't tell what system each of these games came out for. Cause,
well, in order to have the files for the soundtrack that I have in order, I actually have Assassin's Creed 2, Assassin's Creed Brotherhood. I've named them that way so that they actually go in order.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's the continuity is a concern from some people. The lack of original thought is a concern for others. I don't think that everything has to be original. Like as I mentioned before, Mass Effect 2 to me stepped up the series.
I loved
quite
Mass
a bit.
Effect 2.
But it's not original property. But it's not designed to be. It's designed to be another game in a series. I believe that their target is a trilogy, of course. So, and I remember when I ordered Mass Effect 2 sight unseen, knowing full well that I wanted it, and then playing it and having it deliver on the promise 10 times over was just amazing.
I already
that
know.
Doesn't always happen.
I already know that I'm getting Mass Effect 3 when it comes out.
I'm getting the Mass Effect 3 Digital Extreme Edition or whatever.
Yeah, I'm probably going to go with that.
So, ladies and gents, and those of you who do not refer to yourselves as ladies and gents, we are going to wrap this up for today. This has been Patrick, and with me have been David.
Yo.
Jeff.
Hey.
John.
Hello,
and
goodbye.
Chad, who had to leave, but he gives his regards.
Of course he does.
What should I say?
Goodbye.
Yeah, all right. Peace out, everyone. See you
goodbye.
Next
Are
month.
You still there?
Are you
I don't
there?
Hate you. Well, the Skype call quality is going down drastically right now.
For me or for everybody? For me, it's for
everybody. For everybody. Well, yeah. David's hosting the call, right?
Yeah.
Why don't you let me host the call?
That's fine.
I've got fiber and more Mbps than anybody in here, so...
That's probably a wise decision then.
You're one of those magical thinking kind of people, aren't you, Chad? You just sort of figure that, you know, I think it should work, therefore it will.
Well, I could answer that question, but then I'd have to kill you.
And by that, he means yes.
Pretty much.
Someone's eating.
Yeah, I noticed that.
That's what all our listeners of our podcast want to know. Is when we're eating and what we're eating.
Should have eaten when Janathus was eating.
That's right. Just wait till Janathus gets on a tirade and you'll have plenty of time to eat during the podcast. Recording.
Oh, yeah, you can do that too.
But I'd like to ramble off the tarp of Mars's head. His head is so ramblish.
My head is nothing of the sort.
Because we're an adventurous group of people.
Read it, Jeff.
Welcome to Over the Fence, a podcast for adventuring gamers to discuss the worlds of gaming, entertainment, and technology.
That sounds a lot better.
I like it.
It's funny.
I'm going to get a glass of water out of it.
Yeah, I'm going to get some coffee.
That's a good idea. I need one too.
Okay. I'll be here. Do, 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 do.
This was a trial. Making a note here, huge success. It's hard to overstate my satisfaction.
Someone is back.
Yes.
I think you should descend with each word of gaming, entertainment, and technology.
Dun, dun,
gaming,
dun.
Entertainment and technology.
Dun, dun, dun.
And then there will be Dalkin to ruin it.
Look, two tickets to that thing you love.
Look again. The tickets are now diamond.
Hi, welcome to the Satellite of Love. I'm Mike Nelson. With me is Crow T Robot and Tom Servo.
Hello.
Hi.
Sorry, Okay, no, for real, though.
Hey there!
If that doesn't go into the bloopers, I'm suing. Oh, he's not here, sorry.
Eric's not here.
Skip. La, 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 la. Okay. Stop! Okay.
Quit failing so hard, all right, Patrick.
All right, we need some outtakes anyway.
And John.
Hello, but there's also Chad.
Oh, why is he showing up on the... That's weird.
I'm right here.
All
right,
let's try this again.
Yes, please do.
Fine, we'll just do it
from
again.
From the top.
I hate you all. Silence!
Yeah. Silence will fall. Sorry.
That wasn't an invitation to talk.
I have money, and I'm going to get it, and it's going to be awesome. I'm going to blow shit up and chew bubblegum.